We're live this week with What Comes Next.live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm very passionate about what I call open leadership and write daily on my website, tommccallum.com. I'm always very inspired by listening to the thoughts of leaders I meet, which led to this show, where our guest first shares a bit about themselves and their thoughts on what comes next, whether that be tomorrow, next week, next month, in whatever context. Together, we'll then seek to draw out some thoughts that may inspire you to action. Today's guest I'm really pleased to see is my dear friend, Chris van der Kyle, the young man whose 50th I attended in Dundee about this few weeks on from this time last year. And it was almost the weather we had in London last week in Dundee.
Yep.
Once in 1,000 years, you get temperatures like that just in time for a big party. And I've not seen you in person since then, and we've not spoken that often. But I'm the low energy version of Chris, I say to people who know us both. And people who know me know that means you've just got like a nuclear power version of energy. So that's not much of an introduction other than very personal, energetic. And I'm just chuffed to have you on the show. And rarely I just speak with a Scots accent at all when I'm in London, but then I'm seeing my friend and up in Dundee. So Chris, tell us a bit about yourself for our audience.
Yeah, thanks. Good evening, Tom. Good to see you. I'm Chris van der Kyle. I'm really, how would I define myself? I'm a technology entrepreneur. I've been a geek since a young child. I studied computer science, knew it was unemployable, so just went and started a business when I graduated. And that's been it ever since. I've managed to get away with it for the past 29 years or so. And, since then, through a lot of routes, people have come across me probably know my background has been a lot in video games. And the company that I co-own with my co-founder, Paddy Burns, and chair 4J Studios, we're the guys responsible or have been responsible for almost the past decade for the console game versions, PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo versions of Minecraft, which has been somewhat successful, over those years, which is given us loads of opportunity that we never knew we could have or thought we'd have to really kind of fulfill our tech entrepreneur dreams. And I currently chair about 6 or 7 different technology companies, ranging from the games businesses to data analytics and media to insurance tech companies to even ready meal delivery to the elderly. So we're having a lot of fun both directly in technology and businesses that are somewhat related or use technology to make themselves more innovative. But I'm pretty passionate about, the period of history that we live in, even before the extraordinary times we've just had. I feel that, the phrase, we live in the time of the fastest change any of us have ever experienced before, and it will never be this slow again. Is both exciting and frightening in equal measure. And I think even for people who laughed at me about a year ago for saying that and didn't believe it, having lived through the year we've lived through, probably get it a little bit more now. And from a leadership perspective, the challenges that raises across the board are extraordinary. So it's the kind of lines that I look through my daily life in, I think, that the context of that. And I love it. I love getting up every day, being able to think about whatever entrepreneurial challenge is in front of me and the businesses we're involved in, and there's never a dull moment, really.
Yeah. Well, you and I got together with a bunch of other folk in Scotland, when was it? 3 and a bit years ago in Glasgow at one point. And we talked about Towards a Brave and Confident Scotland. That phrase that you used, I think you were using it back then, you were talking a lot about the fourth industrial revolution and this idea of the world is moving the fastest it's ever been and the slowest it ever will, was something I heard from you first. And around the same time, I was talking about the idea of leadership being unthinkable, in that things are moving so fast that there's no way even the smartest chief executive in the world can have all the answers. So it creates new paradigms for leadership. And I think what we've seen in the last sort of, well, now roughly 6 months, right? We've been at it 5 months plus, has been monolithic organizations. Some have really been shown up as being not fit for purpose at the speed of change that we're living in. And others have really found that they had the assets to move incredibly fast and use the people within them. And it's really you know, sorted the wheat from the chaff a little bit. Just wondering what you've observed and what you're seeing now. And I mean, the theory is what comes next, and pick any topic or industry or sure. area you're passionate about to chat about.
Sure. So, you know, look, it's easy to take this past 6 months as a sort of microcosm and say, well, it's happened. It's come in a flash and it will, you know, be history soon. And we'll move on, you know, gone back to our daily lives. I hope we don't, actually. I hope we really understand and try and take the opportunity that's been given to us to realize that when you grasp situations like this and deal with them in a slightly extraordinary way, amazing things start to happen. You know, things have happened. I've heard people talk to me about, my goodness, you know, things we thought would take 10 years have happened in 6 months or 10 weeks. And I'm saying, yep, if everybody believes it can be done, it can continue to happen at that pace. The only thing holding us back is inertia in the systems, you know, generally. And the one thing I've been thinking quite a lot about, as many people have, and especially those young people that have been going through it, are the debacle that we've just had in education, with exam qualifications specifically. And it was remarkable to me that our governments, and I don't just mean elected politicians, but they're a big part of it, but the civil servants and the bureaucrats that are involved in the various qualification authorities couldn't work out that this was going to happen. You know, what they tried to do was build some kind of facsimile for exams that were not going to happen this year by using an algorithmic outcome and believing that that was going to be in some way satisfactory. Well, do you know what? It wasn't in any way, shape or form, and the public knew it the minute it came out. But the answer wasn't to run a better algorithm or just let the teachers decide. The answer is to use this as an opportunity to say, actually, that old system is garbage. Let's chuck it in the bin once and for all, because we kind of have to chuck it in the bin. And let's talk about the individual and learning objectives and learning opportunities. And let's talk about why we have exams at all. Really, we only have exams to try and benchmark and qualify individuals for the next thing that they're going to do. Well, there's lots of ways that one can do that, not just with exams. I mean, yes, you want some kind of line in the sand to motivate people to go for goals, to kind of say, right, I've achieved to this level, now it's time to go to the next stage, and you need to work out how to do that. But it doesn't have to be with crappy pieces of paper that once people move on in their life, they never look at again.
Yeah.
You know, and I was asked to kind of comment on it recently, and I said, look, if it's me as an employer, or if I was in a institute of higher education, like a further education college or a university or whatever, I'd be saying, look, I'm not even going to worry about what it says on that certificate this year. Here's how I'm going to ask you to apply, and these are the skills I'm going to be looking for. And most of them are about capable learners, motivated learners, having the right base knowledge and really the appetite to absorb and, you know, and grow. And guess what? That's what we're looking for in almost every business that we've got. You're looking for certain skills at times. If there's a technical role, you need to kind of base qualify the individual to know that they're going to be competent to do whatever it is. Sometimes in the case of things like, you know, key skills like pilots or bus drivers, whatever it is, you need a certain level of certification to sign somebody off. I get that. But actually, that's only the thing that opens the door. What comes next, to borrow your phrase, is what's really, really important. And none more, you know, no time more so than now, because the ability now is adapt, learn, develop, and cycle that through every, you know, almost daily. And anybody that thinks that there's this kind of finish line that you get to within your own career or education, they're kind of consigned to the dustbin. You know, we've seen right now, you know, because people are going to have to redefine themselves and retrain and jump careers like they've never had to before. And parallel multiple careers, look online, look digitally at what can be enabled. The thing is, the opportunities out there are endless. The boundaries are only really in either what people believe in themselves or what they've been led to believe by others around them. And I do think the education system and the way teaching is done to people at the moment bears a huge responsibility in people developing those strictures and attitudes. And in fact, people kind of almost reflecting back, well, I had to do it. So if you've not done what I had to do, then I'm not going to count you as worthy. And that's just all nonsense, you know, because really what we need to do is use our skills, our leadership skills, our people skills, and the technology that exists around us to help us work out people who have the capability to come into a particular role or a particular course or whatever it is, and then support them in being successful in that. And it's just a bit of a shame that this was not an opportunity taken to deal with that, and instead it's descended into farce and people screaming at each other about something that actually seems incredibly important today, but is not particularly important going forward.
As I was listening to you, and I've got just a few years on you, but I'm sure we've both been involved in hiring many, many more people than we can count.
Yeah.
And you've got, on the one hand, you've got the sort of table stakes, the Americans would call it, the basics, and depending on the role, it's, you need certain qualifications and skills. But I could give anecdote after anecdote of where people were successful hires. It's all about the stuff that it doesn't say on the CV or the resume. All right.
Yeah.
And I could talk about that, but actually then you said something which really struck me. You talk about opportunities are endless, and then you talk about boundaries, and it's about beliefs either in the individual or in the system. And it kind of, something just sparked for me, apart from a quote from one of my favorite movies, Cloud Atlas, of all boundaries are conventions, and a convention is just a belief, is that there is this conversation a lot. I know, you know, one of your pals in the leading business community in Scotland is very much about entrepreneurialism in schools, etc. But I've always had this question around, can entrepreneurialism be taught, particularly on university courses, MBAs, etc.? And I'm kind of going, if that lecturer really was a business entrepreneur, they'd be out there doing it, right? And so I've been a bit skeptical around that. However, I'm looking at this slightly differently, because just from that thing about you talking about boundaries and beliefs. So forgive me for riffing for a minute, is maybe you can teach it, particularly at the younger age, because it's the tall poppy syndrome. It's in Scotland, it's Kent your feather and this kind of thing. It's limiting beliefs systematically, whether it's nationally, whether it's within a civil service, whether it's in elected politicians. One thing that most successful entrepreneurs have in them is they have not just passion, but they have this amazing belief that it's going to work, right? And it has to be backed up by facts and a bit of luck here and there. Maybe what we're really missing, and this is quite an esoteric conversation, but maybe what we're really missing in an education system is bringing out the best in people. I've been studying a guy who was the subject of the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer many years ago, Josh Waitzkin, who's this polymath genius. And he says, ultimate elite performance is all about self-expression. So I don't know where that goes to, but actually just something you said there about boundaries and beliefs
let me pick up something you said there. Use the phrase entrepreneurialism. That does mean something. And the purebred definition of entrepreneur in business is the one you're kind of referring to. I don't really use that anymore when I talk about what we try and espouse and try and enable within things like schools in Scotland. What we talk about is entrepreneurial behaviour.
Yeah.
That does not necessarily lead you to start a business and start making computer games build a bus company. Entrepreneurial behaviour are traits and characteristics that to me define the best people I'll ever meet. You know, they kind of question everything, and then they take risks in generally a managed and safe way. Some entrepreneurs are, some are just completely nuts and just go out and bet the farm on everything. And there are various gradations of that. And depending on the context in which you're applying entrepreneurial behaviour, you'll kind of take a different view of risk, but you've got to take risk. You know, I mean, it's a total misnomer. Risk management means removing risk. And risk management doesn't mean removing risk. It means enabling people to take risks in a managed way that doesn't destroy everything around them. I mean, that's really, if I were head of a big corporation and bring my risk management group in and beat them over the head with that and actually find the best entrepreneurially brained person to take over, because that role in a company done well will unleash massive potential in a company, done badly will kill the company. The company will be dead in no time, because if there's no entrepreneurial behaviour, there's no risk taking, there's no reflection on that worked, let's do more of it, that didn't work, let's do less of it, or I completely screwed that up. Well done for completely screwing it up, because you realise you've completely screwed it up and we've risk managed it in a way that we can recover and learn from that, and the next thing you do or we do will be so much more successful because of it. They are all classic entrepreneurial traits, and I want to see them in schools. I want to see them in the police. I want to see them in the heart of government, and there's just not enough of it.
Pause for a minute so I can just capture that piece. Yeah. So, because I have a client that I need to talk to about this, a CEO who's just hiring their C-suite person for risk. And I got the job, watch this recording of this live show I did with Chris and the way he described it, because the job of risk management is to enable people to take risks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite a paradigm shift for a lot, for a lot of people. And it's just giving, if you go back to the word boundaries with a different definition, it's like the Scottish government started doing baby boxes a while ago.
Yeah.
And I use that as an example because when babies are not held closely, right, they're not comfortable. It takes them a while to increase their boundaries. So they need that boundary to play in. You give people a boundary, say, here are the safe boundaries the company or the organization will allow you, instead of just going, computer says no. Speaking as a bloke who's just bought a house but couldn't get a mortgage because computer says no. Because my assets are in the Cayman Islands, and they go, oh, high risk. The US government, by the way, on a wee mini side rant, which I shouldn't be doing on a live show, but anyway, the US government 2 weeks ago classified Cayman as high risk for COVID. Their own CDC classifies it as low risk because they haven't had a single case in months. So somebody in risk management said, computer says no.
Yeah, and
that's a brilliant take.
If I look at my own career, my entrepreneurial career, you know, it kind of starts off pre-university, really little business projects that I was involved in that were, you know, whether it be running a band or whatever. So, you know, very, very low risk. For me at the time, quite big things, but look back on them, tiny. But I've often reflected in terms of the investment, as I started building my businesses, couldn't raise tuppence for investment. And then I got a little bit more, maybe 10 grand, and, you know, tried to build a business on that and got so far. And then I got a bit more. And sometimes it went well, sometimes it went less well. Then my first round of venture capital was like £1 million, and, you know, enormous amount of money for me to start to deploy in there, and then off we went on the journey from there. If I look back now, there's a bit of me says, oh, why didn't somebody just give me access to like 50 million on day one and I could have got on with it? Actually, I know fine well I would have completely screwed up probably very calculable. I would have burned through all that cash. And actually, what the system did or what societal structures did is just gave me training wheels. You know, they said, here's 10 grand, go and see what you can do with that. Oh, I've made it into a bit more, but I'll try a bit more. Okay, we now have a bit more confidence in you. Let's put a bit more into you. And that actually should be a model that you can do anywhere. You know, let people, you'd say, either have boundaries or have training wheels, as it were, but allow them to fall. And then as they pick themselves up, have leadership that understands, right, they've fallen three times and also they've succeeded with one absolute home run. They know more from the three times they fell than the ones they succeeded. Great. You can now have a promotion, which means you've got access to more capital and more toys to play with. And keep giving people that. Keep pushing them to see how far they can go.
So, and also there's the sort of iteration and agile and all that kind of language. And so we talked about education and, conscious I've veered off at a tangent a little bit. But imagine I gave you a magic wand, and we don't have to pick a particular country, but you can choose one if you like. But if I gave you a magic wand and said, well, entrepreneurial thinking is not necessarily about making money. It's about questioning everything, taking risks, trying it at different levels. Yeah. If I put you in charge of education.
Yeah.
Right. And let's just talk about pre-university education.
Sure.
What would your entrepreneurial mind do with that?
Really easy. Really, really easy. I would go to the teaching profession, mm-hmm. Go to the people that are generally called inspectors or whatever, who set the bounds for how a teaching professional works, and inspect every now and again, and I'd say teacher inspectors, make a criteria of your inspection. Something that every teacher must do is once a year, they must show how they have taken a risk in their professional practice, tried something, implemented it in with the kids that they're working with, and decided through peer review or themselves, self-review, was it successful, was it not? If it wasn't successful, share it with everybody and say why it wasn't successful. If it was successful, share it with everybody and say why you think it was successful, and then do either more of that if it's been a successful side, or if it's a bit less successful, your next innovation should take that into account and move on. If you insisted that every teacher had to do that, the level of moderated, and these are professionals, they will know where the boundaries are as to, you know, there's risk and there's risk that they can take. You would see inside 5 to 10 years, enormous positive developments. You would see quite a lot of, you know, forks in the road and people going off at tangents. But what would then happen is some of those tangents would be incredibly brilliant. And people would then go, okay, we better make that the mainstream, because that outlier over there has actually solved the problem none of us could see it solved forever. The problem we seem to have at the moment is all we do is put enormous strictures on our teachers. Even in Scotland, where we have these things, although there is no fixed curriculum, there's only curriculum guidelines. That, to me, is BS. There's a bureaucracy that will not let the teachers, you know, waver really, you know, from a certain path. And the idea that they are professionals and should be given the license to go out and innovate seems to not exist anywhere that I can see. Albeit the mavericks and entrepreneurs are hiding there, and they're doing it either extracurricularly. You know, and guess what? They're the teachers that when you talk to kids, they're the ones that they remember. They're the ones that impacted their lives. And they're the ones that probably inspired them to go and do something quite special.
And, yeah, I mean, there's some big and simple and powerful thoughts in here that you're sharing. And for me, one of them is, you know, if it's mandated, you have to take a risk, then initially that's going to be scary. So there might be tiny, tiny risks that they take, you know. My friend Alex Barker was on the show a few weeks ago, who's to do with Be More Pirate, and she talks about, you know, small acts of rebellion or repeatable acts, and just getting people used to within corporates being a bit piratical when they're not naturally, you know, people will look at you and me and go, well, you're just wild risk takers. No, not at all. I mean, I'm a chartered accountant, for God's sake, you know. It's but if you have that combination of questioning beliefs and, you know, another way of looking at this is the greatest risk is often the risk not taken. You know, what Seth Godin talks about in the Icarus Deception is sometimes by playing it safe, you tend to think your comfort zone sits on top of your safety zone. But Kodak found that when digital photography, which they invented and sat on for 18 years, suddenly made being in the business of producing and selling film not safe anymore, but they wouldn't take the risk to move towards the new safety zone.
Yes,
so it's incredibly unsafe to not take risks is the point.
Sure, and the extreme version of it in our corporate culture and sort of in the spotlight of corporate culture, you know, is Elon Musk. You know, he learnt the ropes in his back in the days of, you know, PayPal and, you know, and the things that he did there, and he actually probably hooked on the entrepreneurial risk side. And there are times when you look at some of the things he does and thinks, whoa, that's extreme. But actually, it's delivering every single time. You know, he's leading, SpaceX is definitely leading the way in terms of private sector space exploration. Tesla, well, according to share price, certainly, and I think many other things, is redefining how people think about, car manufacture and car delivery. And nobody, I mean, big auto is screwed because it will simply not take the level of risk and innovation that they are. They say they do, they market that they do, and they're not even taking 5% of the risk. And that's why they're being obliterated right now.
Well, I give my, a little definition I have of entrepreneurialism, as in linking to your thought about it, not just being about people going to business, which I hear all too often, particularly in Scotland, it's all about business startups and all that kind of stuff. But let's not veer off there. But it is about a mindset. And if I kind of mash up the translation of the French into the English, it's taking an opening, right? Yeah. And it's when you see a gap, and in business is often you see this raging gap, and you know, you ask an entrepreneur, why do they start a business? They say, I couldn't not do it. I think one of the ones which most people can grasp rather than some of the odder ones he's done, but the number of years ago, Elon Musk gave away all the patents, all the IP to all the battery technology, right? To all the charging technology for the Teslas.
He didn't give them away. He said he would open them up.
He opened them up. Sorry. He may have licensed them or whatever, but he opened them up. He didn't keep it a closed shop like Apple, for example. And I just thought, that's brilliant, because the only way you're ever going to scale electric cars is by being able to charge them. So I just, you know, but the feedback he got from the investment community and from the big auto companies was he's mad. But it looks so obvious to me. It's like, because they always, you know, his answer was broadly, well, we're just going to keep researching it faster than anybody else and we'll always be ahead of the game.
Exactly. So it's, you know, look, you know, you probably noticed, or you might not have noticed, that in this whole conversation when you've been asking me what should we do here and what's going to happen, I've not really talked about technology.
No.
Because, of course, technology is important. Of course, the period of time we live in, the Moore's Law equation for the cost and complexity of silicon has reached a stage where it's so cheap to do things. I mean, all the AI stuff that we're doing today has really been around for 30 or 40 years. It's just that now we can do it fast enough for it to be useful because things are so cheap without, you know, without having to get gazillions of investment. You know, the cloud computing revolution led by Amazon really with AWS has enabled entrepreneurial businesses to go from idea to massively scaled technology solution in minutes, not years and waiting for Oracle or somebody like that, or Sun Microsystems to deliver your racks of equipment. Those technology innovations have enabled a climate like we've never seen before. But none of the behaviours and leadership that we need to develop are about necessarily to do with technology. They're to do with human behaviour and things that used to be okay to be a bit intransigent, to let inertia, well, things will happen. You know, don't you worry, son. You just wait your turn and your turn will come. It's like, you've got to get on it now.
Yeah.
You've got to learn now. And also, you need to learn enough to be able to deliver rather than learn everything. And I think that's where, if I circle all the way back to the education challenge, stop telling children they need to know everything before they do something and just explain to them, you only need to know enough to go and try. And actually, you'll learn even more as you do it. Learning by doing has always been a brilliant phrase. I think it's the slogan of Young Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, Junior Achievement International, that organization. And it's never been more true than now. You know, learning by doing. Have enough knowledge. Google and it's like have resources at our fingertips because of the internet that historians could only have dreamed of or our predecessors could only have dreamed of. You know, how much more entrepreneurial, you know, would somebody like Leonardo da Vinci have been had he had the internet? You know, you can debate whether or not he would have got lost on YouTube for 4 years and never, never completed the Mona Lisa. But, you know what? I don't believe that. I think the best minds of our time have now been unleashed in a way to do things faster and learn faster and deliver faster than they've ever been before. And we need to build an education system and actually a government structure and a societal structure. The countries that do that, that build structures that allow their citizens to absolutely flourish in the current climate, are the ones that are going to win. And right now, we ain't doing it.
Well, I'm going to pull this together and wrap up for us. This is amazing. So I know you're very passionate about your hometown of Dundee, and through a number of people in Dundee, a big community over a number of years, you have what to me is one of the top 10 structures, man-made structures in the world sitting there in the V&A. And it just fills me with joy to see that building. And what that does is the physical centerpiece for the whole city, it's changed it. The masterstroke, though, was bringing not just any type of museum there, but bringing a design museum. And in fact, design is about thinking. And you've got people you and I both know involved with that and systems thinking. And your idea, your one idea you gave our education was around systems thinking, about the answer is in the system and in the people. So I guess in summary, if the limitation in the machine of society is no longer technology, it's human belief and human behavior. And that's a
first. I mean, we're not at the singularity yet, and we may be at some point, but this is where we're reaching the point where the computers and the technology is no longer slowing us down. We're slowing us down. All right. And maybe that's a good or a bad thing. You can argue that, but really it's those boundaried behaviors and boundaried beliefs. And I love your particular simple, concise idea of everybody take a risk. Everybody get out of your comfort zone into your stretch zone and share your successes and your failures, because that will, the teaching profession is full of brilliant, passionate people. I know your father was a well-renowned teacher his whole life, in whatever definition. And, you know, that those the ability within that system, once it gets enabled and not constrained, will be very powerful. So, yeah, thank you for your insights, my friend.
Good. No, great to see you, Tom. And thank you for having a conversation with me.
Okay. Well, I'll just wrap this up. No. Okay. That was What Comes Next Live. Thank you, Chris Van der Kar.
Thank you.